Imagine you're a young princess, and your name is Orihime. You're stunning, with long, silky black hair, dressed in a fancy kimono, with smoky bedroom eyes. All the things you imagine when you think of a princess. No, not one of those golden-haired, blue-eyed, taffeta-dressed ones. You're either Chinese, Korean, or Japanese, depending on which version of your story we're telling. Oh, an important note. When I say that you're young, you're in your 20s. Just to make absolutely sure we remove any and all creep factor from the story, that's important. Okay, back to the tale. Your name is Orihime, and that means Weaver Princess. So it's no surprise to you or anyone else that you just happen to be the best silk weaver in the entire galaxy. And I mean that literally, because that's where you do your weaving. On the banks of the Milky Way. It's called Amanogawa in Japanese, which means heavenly river. You're up there among the stars, weaving the most magnificent cloth. So otherworldly, in fact, that all the other gods come to you to get their heavenly garments made. Your father, whose name is Tintei, by the way, and rather tyrannical if you want to know the truth, praises you constantly for your hard and beautiful work. You're his only child, and he loves you dearly. You love him too, so you keep working. Days, weeks, months pass. You're in your 20s, remember, and you're basically spending 7 days a week at a loom and have been since this gift of yours was discovered. You start to feel sad and lonely, like something is missing from your life. You think maybe you'd like to meet someone your own age and hang out. But you can already guess how your dad is going to feel about that. But you can't go on like this anymore. Uncanny Japan is author me, Teresa Matsura, exploring all that is weird from Japan. Strange superstitions and old wives' tales, cultural oddities and interesting language quirks. These are little treasures I dig up while doing research for my writing, and I want to share them with you here on Uncanny Japan. I hope you like the show.
This episode is supported by Sonnet. Listening to podcasts shouldn't be hard, but so many podcast apps on Android are cluttered and confusing. With its modern, clean design and extremely user-friendly interface, Sonnet makes it easier for those on Android to discover new shows, listen, subscribe, and get notified of latest episodes. Best of all, it's free. Click on the link in the description to listen to Uncanny Japan on Sonnet.
Hey, hey, everyone. How are you all doing? Hopefully healthy and hanging in there as best as you can. There isn't a whole lot of news on my end, so let's just get into today's topic, Tanabata, or the Star Festival. So before we find out what fate befalls you, you Weaver Princess you, let's look at a little backstory to the story and a little about how Tanabata is celebrated today. Originally from China, it came to Japan in 755, but it didn't really take off until much later in the Edo era, the 1600s on out. It's celebrated on the 7th day of the 7th month, which is July 7th for me and you. However, if you're using an older lunar calendar, then depending on where you are in Japan and what traditions that area adheres to, it can be celebrated anywhere from July 7th to late in August. The two main characters in the story this festival is based on are Orihime and Hikoboshi, who you're going to learn about in a minute. And what's cool about them is even though they are both mythological figures, they're represented by the stars Vega and Altair, both very visible in the summer night sky around this time. So what does one do on Tanabata? Well, someone might bring home a large cutting from a bamboo tree. Kindergartens, elementary schools, and even supermarkets usually have one on display. I don't believe individual households have their own bamboo or sasa branch so much. Although my father-in-law loved to bring us one home, and we loved decorating it. That's what comes next. People, again, this is really fun for children, write down their wishes on these rectangular-shaped pieces of paper. They're called tanzoku. They then tie them to the tree so that there are dozens, if not more, wishes flittering about. I want to pass the math test. I wish my kanji characters would improve. I hope to be a J-League soccer player one day. Anything is okay. But just know that other curious eyes might glance at your wish, so nothing too weird. On top of the pretty tanzoku wishes dangling from the branches, you can also decorate the tree with other colorful and shiny ornaments, usually homemade with origami paper. So the whole thing becomes this very gorgeous wish tree. Single household ones aren't especially amazing, at least ours wasn't, but the ones that have more people working on them are really cool. Hundreds of wishes, along with streamers, origami cranes, those paper chains you used to make when you were little, and all kinds of other creative goodies fluttering in the breeze and adding life to this spindly bamboo tree. When the night of Tanabata arrives, just maybe your wish will be chosen and come true. One of the things I used to really like about the festival was walking with my son to the Shotengai, a kind of Showa-era covered shopping street, on the night of Tanabata. We would stroll down the bustling street under dozens upon dozens of enormous, strung-up crepe paper decorations. These were usually big, fancy paper balls called kusudama, with long, brightly colored streamers flowing underneath them. I just learned that the design was originated in Sendai in 1946 by a shop owner. The Sendai Tanabata Festival is one of the more famous ones in Japan, with thousands of decorations lining the streets. So if you're ever there around this time, definitely check that out. Anyway, the streets would be busy with people dressed in yukata, wearing geta shoes, and the crepe paper ribbons would be so long that you had to walk through them. On both sides of the street would be food stalls selling savory yakisoba noodles, squid legs grilled in soy sauce, chocolate-dipped bananas, or kakigori, big cups of strawberry-shaved ice topped with condensed milk. It always felt like Tanabata got you excited about summer vacation, which in Japan lasts roughly the month of August. So other than the story, the decorating the sasa branch, and walking through a covered strip mall, that's pretty much the whole festival as we observed it. You'll often read that the story of Tanabata is so romantic. I never thought so. It's interesting, and more than a little bizarre, but I'm not sure romantic is the word I'd use to describe Orihime's tale. While there are different versions of the myth of the star-crossed lovers all up and down Japan, they don't really differ in any significant way. The ending is more or less the same. The one I'm retelling now is the one I'm most familiar with. But do read around if you'd like to hear different versions. So where were we? Yes, we left you weeping at your loom on the shore of the Amanogawa, the heavenly river. You gaze out at the stars and you think it might be nice to meet someone your own age, or even go on a date, perhaps. Your father, Tentei, catches you slacking and notices your downtrodden face. He asks what's wrong. Even though you worry about his reaction, you're quite distraught, and you figure, what have you got to lose? So you go ahead and confide in him. To your surprise, he understands and agrees to introduce you to someone nice, someone he's picked out. Then, your dad sets out and looks high and low, until he finds, on the other side of the Milky Way, a very handsome and good-natured boy who is strong and a hard worker. Everything you'd want in a blind date. His name is Hikoboshi, and he is a cow herder of the stars. He herds star cows. Well, the moment you two meet each other, The chemistry is electric. Love at first sight. You don't even wait for a second date. You get married right away. And life is amazing. Every day, gazing lovingly into each other's eyes, sharing your most personal thoughts and dreams. You frolic and laugh and do all those other newlywed things that newlyweds do. Actually, you and Hikoboshi have so much fun hanging out together, you totally forget about your celestial duties. Fine silk kimono aren't being woven, and the gods are lining up to complain to your dad. While on the other side of the Milky Way, star cows aren't being herded, and they're wandering around everywhere, lost, confused, hungry, and sometimes sick. Tente, your dad, is furious. He summons you both and says,
"This is unacceptable. From now on, you will live on either side of the Amanogawa. Orihime stays on this side and starts her weaving duties again in earnest. Hikoboshi, you return to the other side of the Milky Way and take care of those cows."
You're devastated. Kneeling down at the loom once again, your husband and best buddy banished. You can't even bring yourself to weave. Instead, you collapse and cry and sob and wail and moan. This goes on for days until your father finally can't take it anymore. He agrees to let you see your husband once a year on the seventh day of the seventh month. Your spirits lighten and you begin your seven-day-a-week weaving routine. The gods come, parade around in the finery you've made, and leave happy and content. And this continues until July 7th, the day you will get to be with your husband again. You stand on your side of the Amanogawa, but you notice there's no bridge. What? Father is conveniently absent. You run back and forth, but there's no way to get across this heavenly river. Time is running out. You break down again and you begin to cry, but this time a flock of magpies hears you and they take pity. They fly over and create a bridge with their outspread wings, a kind of bird bridge for you to cross. You do, and you are reunited with your one true love, Hikoboshi. Life continues like this for the rest of your days, which you think is fine, except on years when on the seventh day of the seventh month, it rains. Because if the weather is bad and the people on Earth can't look up and see the stars, it means the magpies, too, cannot gather to make a bridge for you. Sadly, you and your cow-herding husband must wait another year before you can hook up again. The end. Or not really the end, because Tanabata is still celebrated to this day. All playfulness aside, I have always really enjoyed the Tanabata festival. Thinking back to when my son was very little, it was probably one of the festivals with the sweetest memories for me. The vibrant decorations, the magical feeling of hope when you write your wishes on brightly colored tanzoku, and then tie them to the frilly cut piece of bamboo. If you haven't seen the festival yet, I do hope you can come to Japan one day and experience it yourself. Just make sure that you check whether the area you plan to visit uses the old calendar or the new one. So I'll stop there for today. I want to give a great big special thanks to all my patrons for your support and friendship. One of my Tanabata wishes for you is to have health and happiness and continued awesomeness. The women at the post office told me that the rules for mailing things will change July 1st. And I'm hoping that means I'll be able to start sending all the back goodies to my patrons who have waited so patiently, and also return to sending out postcards and envelopes per usual. That would be another good Tanabata wish, come to think of it. Thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you again in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Psst. Hey, do you like scary stories? Or maybe you don't do full-on horror, but enjoy a nice dark tale, Something creepy involving Japanese folklore and superstition? Well, if that's the case, you can sneak on over to Amazon or wherever you like to buy books and look for my two short story collections, A Robe of Feathers and The Carp-Faced Boy. All you need to do is search for Teresa Matsura. Let me spell that for you. Teresa Matsura. Another place you can find me doing things is on Patreon. There, once a month, for my $5 and up patrons, I translate, retell, and record obscure Japanese folktales. Some are dark, some are humorous, some are just weird. And lastly, another super sweet thing you can do is to write a review on iTunes. By doing this, you help like-minded people find Uncanny Japan. It's a little thing, but it means a lot, and it's a great big help. Thank you. I'm Teresa Matsura, and I'll talk to you soon.